Hello and welcome to the Friday, December 8th, 2017 edition of On Iowa Politics. This week, mental health, booze or women or alcohol, and the end of the bottle bill. Hi, I'm James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette. With me today are Aaron Murphy, Lee Newspaper State House Bureau Chief. Good morning, Aaron.
Good morning, James. Great to be here.
And Gazette columnist Todd Dorman. Good morning, Todd.
Good morning.
You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. And if you tune into Iowa Public Broadcasting's Iowa Press tonight, you can find Aaron Murphy interviewing Mary Kramer about the workplace culture at the state capitol. First up, mental health becomes a campaign issue. Maybe it became an issue when former Governor Terry Branstad closed a pair of mental health institutes. Combined with further cuts and changes in Iowa's Medicaid program, it's taking center stage on the campaign trail this year. In the past week, Andy McGuire unveiled a 7-point plan that she called a starting point for combating Iowa's mental health, substance abuse, and opioid addiction epidemics. And Fred Hubble laid out a plan that called for, among other things, at least 50 to 75 high-intensity mental health beds for inpatient treatment in a public-private partnership. And when Democratic, Republican, and no-party candidates for governor gathered in Des Moines this week to talk about mental health, 400 people turned out to listen to them. Aaron Murphy was there. It seems that mental health isn't just a bullet point on a laundry list of campaign promises this year. Well, what's driving this conversation, and is there any consensus on which direction we should be going?
I think what's driving it is just that, you know, this has been an issue to a certain degree before, but it's just something that for a lot of people isn't getting any better, isn't going anywhere, and there's more and more people paying attention to it. One of the things that a couple of the candidates talked about was needing to kind of erase the stigma of talking about mental health issues. I think that is slowly happening, so you have more people talking about it now, and so the just the stories that keep coming out about individuals that have issues and for whatever reason can't get the care they need, and sometimes tragic things happen. I think the more and more people either read or hear about these things or live them, you know, happens to someone they know, the more and more this has become an issue at the state level. And there's been some changes, some significant changes made at the state level that feeds all this too. You mentioned the closure of the mental health institutes a few years ago. They changed the delivery system where instead of every county having its own mental health services, the counties are grouped into 14 regions that they kind of collaborate to deliver services. That's been a mixed bag so far. So just kind of a confluence of a lot of things that have made this a growing issue on the campaign. Is there consensus? I think there's some things that a lot of people agree on, but there's a lot of ideas. There's a lot of different ways to go about it. So, no, I don't think there's a consensus, and that's why it's interesting. And you noted the two candidates who put out their plans. There are a lot of different things talked about at the forum. You know, how do we get more beds? Do we even need more beds? It's a very complex issue, so I wouldn't say there's one consensus solution that everyone's rallying behind. There's a lot of people with a lot of different ideas.
Is there sort of a separation between the candidates? And I mean, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, I mean, is there a difference in their approach? Like you would expect if they were promising, you know, if they were talking about tax cuts or some other right program.
It's not a down the line party issue, I wouldn't say. Like I said, there's so many different possible solutions and so many different issues, so many different ways to go at this. It's almost like everybody has their own unique take on it. The one pretty consistent thing I did hear at the forum, and I noted this in my report from that night, is that and you noticed mentioned that the privatization of Medicaid, moving that management to the three private companies, well, two for the time being, that was one that almost unanimously, especially the Democrats and independents, agreed that reversing that, sending Medicaid back to a state-run operation, would benefit the mental health care system. That was one thing that a lot of the candidates agreed on. I don't recall hearing that I think from only one of the Republican of the three Republicans that were there, but the rest of the field all agreed on that. Other than that, yeah, I mean, it varies from candidate to candidate, and it's not a Democrat versus Republican issue.
Todd, it seems like this is an issue where there's no easy answer that fits on a bumper sticker, you know, that I'm going to promise 10% more mental health than the next guy. So while there's widespread agreement that something needs to be done, is this an issue that sort of distinguishes a candidate or translates into votes for a candidate?
Well, I think probably for folks watching the issue, that sort of the key thing is that it sounds like we've got a group of candidates that are at least, you know, from a mental health policy standpoint, willing to listen to people that are actually, delivering service that are affected by this issue. You know, that was sort of the knock on the Branson administration, is they've made a lot of big decisions that affect this issue without really gathering that input or giving people a adequate heads up, or rushing sort of to privatize Medicaid and to close those facilities. And I think that's probably what, I don't know how it's going to differentiate candidates that much, because it sounds like everybody thinks it's a priority and people are coming out with their plans. But I mean, just to change that, you actually have a dialogue with people affected and have them sort of help you shape what the response is, you know, something that actually addresses the problem rather than just sort of addressing a budget line item or saving money to pay for tax cuts or whatever your motivation is. I mean, it sounds like we're getting back to a process where maybe the people that are affected are actually going to drive the policy, which is where we should have been in the first place, but we, for some reason, haven't been.
Aaron, I want to come back to you. From this forum you were at the other night with the crowd there, do you get any sense that this, and this is sort of the same question I was asking Todd, is this an issue that will change people's votes? That, I mean, we talk about, obviously taxes are a big issue, school funding is a big issue, but is mental health going to be an issue that in 2018 may sway votes?
Yeah, boy, that's a great question, and it's one that honestly I've been asking myself since the event on Tuesday night, and I wrote about it in my column for the weekend. I don't know that I know the answer to that yet. That may be the question to start asking folks the next time we go to one of these forums. It's certainly an issue that is very close to people's hearts, and something that obviously affects them on a personal and emotional level when they know someone who's going through these kinds of issues. It's something that's driving people to, contact their legislators and governor and the candidates and try and get them involved and engaged. It's obviously moving people in that kind of activism sense. Will that translate to, a priority voting issue at the polls? I guess that's tougher to say. I can't say for certain that it will. It has struck me how much it moves people to be involved. Whether it will be a deciding factor when they cast their ballots next June and November, I don't have a great answer. I think that'll be interesting to find out and learn more as we go along here.
Maybe we'll just have to wait until June and November to see how much it translates into votes. But all right, moving on, the end of the bottle bill. Over four decades, the nickel deposit on beer and pop cans and bottles has become part and parcel of Iowa life. However, Iowa grocers and beverage bottlers would like to change that. They released a poll that found widespread support for modernizing and reforming the state's 39-year-old bottle bill. By reform, it appears they mean get rid of it. They had some support for that in the legislature last year, or I guess earlier this year, when the House Environmental Protection Committee voted to end the nickel deposit, expand curbside recycling, and create a fund for litter prevention. Todd, will the legislature mark the 40th anniversary of the bottle bill's passage by repealing it?
Yeah, I'm skeptical. I mean, when back in ancient times, when I covered the legislature, this came up routinely, and lots of people had elaborate plans for, I remember Merlin Bartz in particular. He had a flow chart that it was very confusing. But this comes up, and you've got this sort of, there are sort of big influential groups on each side of this. The grocers, of course, want this to be changed because they don't want to have to redeem the bottles and cans anymore. And you know, you've got in the past, you've had former governors and including Governor Branstad, who have stood up and said, you know, that they're supportive of this. I don't know exactly where Kim Reynolds is on this issue, but so I mean, it's possible that they'll do something, but the bill as it is popular, and that's always a barrier to changing it. You know, it's one of those issues where I guess if the governor gives some indication that she's interested in changing the bottle bill and has a proposal, then it could gain some momentum because of course Republicans control the legislature and so that could get rolling. But you know, I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen any evidence that the balance of power has changed on this issue to the point where we're actually going to see a real push to get rid of it.
Given the popularity of the bottle bill among Iowans other than grocers and I guess the bottlers, do you think this voting to repeal the bottle bill might have political consequences come November next year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, something that you get rid of something popular, it's always a problem. But and you can see the TV ads already with you know, the ditches full of bottle rocket sticks and aluminum cans, and like, you know, you kind of combine the fireworks and the bottle bill and all these other things, and I guess there's probably a message there. But you know, that's sort of been the defense against changing the bottle bill, of course, is that it's popular. The polls show it is. And if you can come up with a plan that you know, is also popular, I know the grocers have this poll that you know, lo and behold, what a surprise. It shows that people favor their side of the issue. That's always the great thing about the polls done by interest groups. But I, you know, if you can build, if you have a good idea, you know, if you can come up with a better idea than the bottle bill and you can sell it, then, you know, that neutralizes the popularity argument. But a lot of times, as I sort of mentioned before, the alternatives become sort of complicated. You know, the bottle bill is simple. You don't throw your can in the ditch. You take it and get your nickel that you paid. The flowchart approach, where you set up six funds and you know, sort of create new bureaucracies and curbside recycling, which a lot of people have, and some places and, you know, folks in the rural areas don't have. But I think if that's complicated versus simple, I think simple usually wins out.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's part of the beauty of the bottle bill for most people, is the simplicity of it. Moving right along to the "he said what" portion of the show, Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley probably has gotten more attention for his remarks about the estate tax than for his you-know-what remarks about Dairy Queen. But the DQ quip was seen as cute, perhaps even endearing, not so much with his comment about the need to get rid of the estate tax to reward those who are investing in their farms and businesses, quote, as opposed to those who are just spending every darn penny they have, whether it's on booze or women or movies. Todd, my first question is whether that's a multiple choice and whether there should be an all-of-the-above option.
Well, I think Chuck's probably wishing right now it had been none of the above, because this hasn't worked out so well for him. I mean, they announced the conference committee on the big tax bill, and he's not included despite his long experience on the finance committee and on taxation issues. So I think that remark sort of came back to bite him. You know, this lecturing the rabble just really never works out very well for politicians. I mean, we had Barack Obama talking about clinging to your guns and your religion, and Mitt Romney and the 47% getting all the free stuff, and Bruce Braley had a problem with talking about Chuck Grassley in front of lawyers in Houston when he thought he wasn't, you know, he didn't know he was being taped. So you have to be careful sort of coming, you know, talking from on high about the problems of the little people and doing it as you pass a tax cut package that seems to benefit the wealthy, fairly, you know, and also the estate tax, which is paid by folks who are passing on multi-million dollar or who are receiving multi-million dollar inheritance. So the optics were bad. The words were bad. I don't think it's gonna, you know, there are, we've gotten letters to the editor, people saying it's time for him to step down and these sorts of things. I don't think that's going to, you know, I don't think the he's going to have to do that, but it certainly gave his critics plenty of ammunition.
I think what you're saying is it's going to take more than two scoops of soft serve to make things right with voters.
Yeah, you can, what kind of in the language of his tweet, you can assume this won't die, I guess, is anytime soon. Assume, quote, lives and lives on.
Yeah, exactly. it will live on. But that's it for this edition of On Iowa Politics. I hope it's been worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Fan mail may be sent to oniowapolitics@gmail.com. And you can find us every week on the home pages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo, Cedar Falls Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Kelly Parda Cooper, an Iowa singer-songwriter, will take us out. If you know a band or talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, send us a sound file, and remember to follow us on Twitter and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes and Stitcher. For Aaron, Todd, and our producer Max, I'm James Lynch. Thanks for listening.
I left my country home. I left the fields and plains. Feel the desert wind. Escape the rain. She saw me coming from a thousand miles away. Took my hand, asked my name. Led me to a house and fed me Spanish wine. And up till then, well, I swore I was doing fine. She said, you never smile and start. Should I listen to my doubt? Take that gun, make me swallow. I'll be smiling are tied now and my feet won't touch the floor.